Welcome to That Sports Merge Podcast, Episode 3. I'm Matt Hudson, and I'm delighted to be joined once again by my co-host, Lee Hyde. How are you doing, Lee?
Yeah, I'm great, Matt. Thanks. Good.
Yep, really excited about this one. We're going to catch up with our podcast sponsors, Streaker Sports, to find out a bit more about their business and how it continues to grow. Really excited. I think kind of their passion and enthusiasm for what they do has really kind of pulled me along in this one, and you can't help but kind of go with them on it. How did you find it when you spoke to them, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, Pete and Corey are both super, super positive about their business and what they do, as you would expect, but they're just sports fans at the end of the day, which I think really comes through in terms of the concept and the creative behind the business, the reasons why they kind of started doing what they do. And, you can see that they live and breathe sports every day. So that energy comes through in the conversation, which is fantastic. But I think the thing that I wanted to really get to the bottom of was obviously find out a lot more about their business, which we do. And, it kind of goes off in a couple of different ways, which some of which I wasn't aware of previously from the conversations that we've had. But, they're a really young, modern startup within a really competitive marketplace. And you've got to really do something quite unique and quite different to stand out. So that was something that I was really interested in speaking to the guys and really understanding how they target doing that, really.
Well, I know we've kind of spoken about it ourselves, but you kind of look at the model they've built and the kind of brands they're working with, or the kind of sports organisations they're working with. And like you say, you could imagine it working in other territories outside of the USA as well, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. It's got a really unique look and feel, which I think, probably answers the question I've posed just then. But yeah, I could definitely see it, crossing borders and working elsewhere. Obviously, the guys are really laser focused in terms of what they're doing in the States at the minute, and growing their partnerships and their licensed opportunities and that side of things. But yeah, I'm sure at some stage in the future it will become bigger. Just an individual kind of shout out thank you for the sponsorship that they're providing and working together with us in terms of us both growing what we do, really. It's fantastic to have them on board as the official podcast sponsor, so thanks for that.
Really pleased to be on board with them, and well, let's get started now and hear what they had to say.
But first, let's hear from our official podcast sponsor, StreakerSports.com.
StreakerSports.com is the proud sponsor of That Sports Merge Podcast. Bringing creative collaborations, we're the home of unique, heritage-inspired apparel celebrating the culture of sports. Our licensed collections include iconic brands such as Peanuts, Wiffle Ball, and Zamboni. Organizations like USA Hockey and USA Lacrosse. Sports personalities like Dick Vitale and Bill Raftery, as well as 40-plus colleges and universities. Our defunct league collections revive forgotten professional sports leagues of years past, bringing some incredible logos back to life. Check us out at StreakerSports.com. And for a limited time, only for That Sports Merch podcast listeners, use the checkout code SPORTSMERCH15 to get 15% off site-wide. StreakerSports.com.
So joining me today on That Sports Merch podcast, we've got none other than Pete and Corey from Streaker Sports. Guys, thanks for joining us. And I'll probably start by thanking you for the support of the podcast as well with the sponsorship. Obviously, official podcast sponsors of That Sports Merch podcast. We really appreciate the backing and really want to kind of extend our thanks to you for kind of seeing an opportunity, I guess, and trying to work with us in terms of something that works for both of us. Did you want to start by just kind of giving a brief intro to Streaker Sports for our listeners? Hopefully many of whom will have checked out your ranges already because of the sponsorship, but for those that haven't, or maybe those that want a little bit more information, do you want to just jump in and kind of cover off where you're at, where you guys are on your journey, how it kind of started?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having us on. We appreciate it. We appreciate the time, and the nod to the partnership there is great. We're really excited to be working with you and excited to kind of grow the brands together and get out to as many people as we can. So thank you for that. Yeah. So Streaker Sports, we're a lifestyle apparel company based in New York. A bit of background, kind of, as you said, funny enough or ironically enough, Pete and I are not the founders of Streaker Sports. We had started a brand just out of college that got some traction. We were excited about it. We were kind of just figuring it out as we went. But lucky enough, we were able to get acquired by a holding company that also held Streaker Sports. You know, after some conversations, we saw there was a lot of alignment. And in the end, we ended up joining on at Streaker Sports, started to run the day-to-day operations, and just kind of slowly turned it into what you see today. During that process, we actually shut down Streaker Sports for about a year, really ended up only keeping kind of the name, the URL, but really wanted to turn it into something a bit larger that we envisioned. At its original founding, it was a shorts brand of all things, which we still do carry that original product in a couple of varieties. But we just had a bigger vision for it, saw that we could tell more stories through different products, different collaborations. So we really wanted to explore that.
Absolutely. And great news that you acquired so early as well. You know, that's fantastic. They obviously saw plenty in you that they liked and they wanted to get behind and back. What did those early days operations look like after the acquisition? How did you kind of springboard your desire and your visions for where you could go with it?
Yeah, so transparently at the earliest kind of crossroads, it's kind of a nights and weekends side hustle endeavor, if you will, a bit of a passion project, working with a great group of guys. Many of us are still friends today. But I think the biggest thing operationally was sitting down and just figuring out what was the vision. It was still very early from a brand standpoint. So we had that opportunity to reevaluate and think about where are we today and what is the grander vision so that we could kind of go work towards the small milestones to get there. So operationally, it was very much kind of hustle, grind, do what you could here and there after hours or navigating conversations throughout the day or weekends, kind of thing like that. But yeah, kind of just a startup mentality of who can jump in, who can figure it out. Does anybody have ideas? And let's see how we can move this thing forward. I think for us, that mindset really shifted a lot when we were able to kind of jump on full time. We really saw the focus and the energy kind of moving in one direction. And that's where we really saw the growth of the brand and the opportunity for some real conversations around partnerships and planning those out and execute them in, you know, in the manner which they deserve. So that really took us the shift from kind of that little startup, let's figure it out, to, okay, let's dedicate all our effort to this and really jump in and drive this thing forward.
Yeah, sure. And I can understand that transition. It's difficult to go from side hustle to kind of jumping in with two feet and really committing. You know, you've got to have the confidence and the belief. And obviously you guys did, and you know, you've elevated it fantastically well from that point. So Pete, Streaker, you know, I think you'd admit you're still a young brand, a modern startup, but you're in a really competitive marketplace as well. How do you guys work hard to differentiate your offer to stand out in that marketplace?
Yeah, so, you know, I think seeing how crowded the space is, you know, we knew that we really had to approach it a little bit differently. So I think the first thing is, how are we going to find that white space in what isn't being offered? So it was really kind of finding those more niche areas of, you know, the wider landscape of sports culture. So I think a great example of that is we were the first brand to approach wiffle ball. You know, wiffle ball is kind of a classic American heritage brand. You know, I think most, a lot of people remember, you know, growing up as a kid, having a wiffle ball bat, you know, set and hitting balls in their backyard and during the summertime. And, you know, we had reached out to Wiffle Ball, who's, you know, based in Connecticut. It's been made in America since its founding. And shockingly, no one had ever approached them to do licensed apparel before. So, you know, I think that's a really good example of, we've been able to kind of find these like really niche areas, tell those cool stories that, you know, maybe the bigger brands just aren't paying attention to because they're paying attention to their NFL or NBA or MLB licenses. And, you know, and I think also, like, you know, we've been a licensee with USA Hockey for about 5 years. Again, like, we, before us, you know, it was really kind of Nike was really the only company that they had done licensed apparel with. So, you know, we came in and said, hey, like, you know, we want to, here's our vision for building something really unique out. We think that there's a good market for this. You know, hockey is a very, it's one of the fastest growing sports in the US right now. So I think we were able to kind of get in there early as that trend was really going up with hockey in this country. And it's been to date, you know, maybe our most successful licensing relationship. And again, it was a license that nobody was really paying attention to, you know. And I think a more recent example is USA Lacrosse. So USA Lacrosse had reached out to us, you know, seeing what we do with USA Hockey and said, hey, like, we would love to see you guys help us build out a unique licensed apparel program. So it was going in and doing something, you know, finding old marks, old art, and building out something that was truly, new for the market in an up and coming sport in the US. So that's one way. It's, you know, finding those avenues of licenses that we can kind of claim to be our own. And then secondly, the way that we differentiate ourselves is really on our product. I think that we saw an opportunity to create product that has art that's just a little bit different in a more classic sense. So the way that we create our art is it's all hand-drawn graphics. We use period correct lettering, you know, for the eras that we're designing for. You know, we give an authentic, like, distressed treatment to our prints. Really our goal with our product is for it to feel, you know, kind of look and feel like it's been in your closet for years, because that's the sort of stuff that we love. You know, I've been a collector of, like, vintage Champion products for a long time. And I used to, growing up, I used to steal my dad's old college sweatshirts and t-shirts out of his closet and wear them. And just because they had that nice broken in feel, the graphics were so cool. You know, they were kind of cracked and faded. And we've always loved that, like, vintage, that, like, true vintage look. And I think that's really what we saw, like, an opportunity to kind of bring that into the market a little bit more. And that's not to say there aren't other brands that are doing that, but I think that we felt like 90% of brands kind of had the same overall look to their graphics. And we just, you know, we're honestly just, even for ourselves, craving something a little bit different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think anybody that looks across your collections and the product that you're creating and manufacturing will see that. It sounds like you had that vision from an early age in terms of taking those products out of your dad's wardrobe there. And, you know, just because of the reasons that you liked them, they felt broken in, they felt they were from the right era. I guess you guys are creating, you know, not to put words in the mouth of your vision and your brand, but you guys are creating product that potentially looks like you've bought it from the era that it was, you know, it represents. So yeah, some super cool product, and I definitely recommend anybody to jump on streakersports.com and have a look at some of the products if you've not managed so far. You mentioned USA Hockey there. I mean, you've got some really interesting licenses within your rights portfolio. The other two that I'd probably mention notably are Peanuts and Zamboni. I mean, you know, iconic in both senses. How do those rights come about? You mentioned there you guys went to USA Hockey and presented the vision. And then off the back of that, USA Lacrosse came to you. So it kind of comes both ways. What does that process look like in terms of acquiring those licensed rights? Is that you guys identifying and kind of having the conversation with a view to acquiring them? Or does that actually come back the other way as well, in terms of, do you know what, guys, we've got these rights, nobody's really servicing us properly, we like what you do, we see what you do, and we think it's a fantastic partnership? Is there a bit of both in there? Or?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of both. A funny story. So with Peanuts, the way that came about was, you know, so once we got the USA Hockey license, actually in doing research for that license, I came across the fact that the Peanuts creator, Charles Schultz, is actually in the USA Hockey Hall of Fame. which I had no idea. I've always been a massive, massive Peanuts fan. It was such a big part of my childhood. I would read the Peanuts strip in our Sunday Post Standard, our local Syracuse newspaper, every week, and grew up with the holiday specials as so many people did. So I've always loved Peanuts, and it was really interesting for me to learn that because I had no idea that Charles Schulz had this hockey background. He was a huge fan, grew up in Minnesota, ended up being like building the first hockey arena in Northern California where he lived and where his studio was. So anyway, so after learning this information, I reached out to Peanuts Worldwide, who, they're based in New York, and they hold all the licensing rights for Peanuts in that world. And, of course, as things go, I never got a response. And I think over the course of about a year to a year and a half, I would send an email every month just saying, hey, guys, I've got this great idea for a co-licensed collection. Charles Schulz is in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. We have a USA Hockey license. This is a no-brainer. Let's do a co-licensed collection. And I was, I was pretty surprised that I never even got a response. So what I decided to do was actually create some sample products. So I created some art with our USA Hockey marks and with Snoopy, and we printed up some shirts. I mailed them to the Peanuts Worldwide office in New York City. And lo and behold, about a week later, I got a call from the apparel licensing director. And she was like, these are awesome. This is great. Like, let's do this. So that was definitely a lesson in persistence.
Yeah, it was probably a relief the conversation went that way rather than, can you stop using our marks, please?
Yeah, exactly. And, but it was, so that was definitely a really big day for our brand. I mean, that's a really huge license. And frankly, it's a difficult license to get, and they're very, very protective of who they give that license to. The family, the Schulz family, is still very involved. They look at and approve everything. So that was definitely one that we chased for a while, and luckily we were able to get. Zamboni was another one that we had reached out to them and just said, hey, we have this great portfolio of hockey licenses and product. And, we see this vision for Zamboni for product that doesn't exist. And I think that one took maybe a couple emails to get a response, but, they were excited off the bat for what we could do. So I think, really USA Hockey, getting that license was a launching point, I think, and has really opened other doors for us.
Yeah, no, great platform. And I think the Zamboni one caught me because, it's one of those things that everybody that goes to a hockey game is going to see a Zamboni, right, at some stage. But you just don't, everybody's wearing fan gear, they're wearing merch, they're wearing team apparel. And then, there's this thing in front of you that you see every time you go to a live hockey game. And why not? It's iconic. That one jumped out at me, and it was a great creative way of really thinking about things. It's not your obvious kind of go-to license. And yeah, that one was really resonated with me.
Yeah, and I think that one really fits like the core of what our brand is about. Like our tagline is the purveyor of sports culture. And to us, like sports culture, it's not just, it goes way beyond the NFL, the NHL, the MLB, college sports. It goes way beyond that. I mean, there's so many of these smaller stories and these really cool, like a Zamboni. Like Zamboni, yeah, it's a company and they create a product, but the story of Zamboni and how it really changed the game of hockey and just the impact that it's had on the game of hockey is just so, it's so compelling and it's so iconic. And that's really like, I think where we've seen a lot of success and again, like differentiating ourselves from the other brands that, we compete with.
Sure. Sure. The other thing that you've got within your portfolio, and you've referred to it a little so far, is that the number of colleges that you partner with in your portfolio, a growing number of colleges, I should add. Saw a couple of updates the other day in terms of new partnerships being announced, which is great. How does that kind of partnership and licensing program run? I know through doing a little bit of research into some of the brands that try and crack into the major American leagues, and that the process is long, and you've got to have certain financial records behind you, and you've got to have, you know, you have to jump a lot of hurdles and hit a lot of points to even be considered as part of their licensing program or a prospective licensee. Is the college model the same? Is it that hard to kind of become an approved supplier and license, or is it somewhat diluted from the kind of stringent process for the MLBs and the NFLs of this world?
I would say that it's very difficult to break into, but the difference with the college market and a professional league like the MLB is that every school has their own, I think gatekeeper is a good word. So a lot of the bigger schools, you know, the Alabamas, the Penn States, they're part of CLC. So the Collegiate Licensing Company, you know, they hold the rights for the majority of the colleges and universities. But there are some schools that choose to operate independently. So a good example of that is Yale and Harvard, and the majority of the Ivy League schools do their own trademarking, or, you know, operate their own licensing department. So, you know, getting those licenses, it's really reaching directly out to the school and saying, hey, like, you know, we'd love to license with you. But CLC, that's much more of a process. And it's, you know, you need to submit a proposal for each school. And, you know, really, you need to really show how your product is different than what's out there in the market right now, because the college licensed apparel space is incredibly, incredibly crowded. And the fact is that a lot of the products really looks very, very much the same. And if you were to kind of take three or four shirts and take the brand labels out of them, you would never know what brand they are, because they all kind of look the same. But, you know, a lot of these brands have been around for a long time, and they're legacy brands, and they've had these licenses for 20, 30 years, sometimes longer. So I think for a brand like us, who's relatively new, who's very new to the college space, we really, really had to fight and show that we were going to bring something unique, especially for these bigger schools. I think with some of the smaller tier Division I schools, like a University of New Hampshire, like University of Maine, those schools actually had very limited product licensed product available. They were kind of just doing the basic cookie cutter stuff. And we were really the first brand to go to them and say, hey, we would love to build out this really cool, unique vintage collection for you. So that was a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to say an easier sell, because it was still, that comes with its own challenges, because a lot of schools are very hesitant to bring out those old marks because they don't want to create brand confusion. So that's another, you know, so there's multiple layers of challenges getting into that license space.
Now, it's interesting to hear the different approaches and just how vast it can change from one school to another as well. You've done a lot of kind of co-brand licenses, obviously, with the, I think Peanuts has probably allowed you to really mix it up in terms of the college and of the school and bringing Peanuts on board as well. Is that, again, does that give you that opportunity to kind of showcase that you can bring something fresh, you can bring something new that other people aren't doing? Or do you kind of have to justify your product without the co-branding and then bring that in at a later stage? How does that align in terms of those initial conversations?
Yeah, I think it depends. As Pete said, there's multiple avenues, right? I think on the co-license side specifically, for us, it has to make sense in a lot of ways. So as we've already discussed, the Peanuts and USA Hockey, there's a huge amount of overlap there and a ton of storytelling to be had. Giving Charles Schulz's the Hockey Hall of Fame presence, the comic strip, and all the art that was there, it was a pretty easy vision. that we could bring to life and tell that story. We're not thinking about, okay, what two brands can we throw together to just add a collection, right? There really has to be a story, a reality, and something that people will connect with. And that's maybe easier said than done, right? Because you think of any number of iconic brands, well, of course, we can connect them to in some way, right? But for us, it's really about authenticity and making sure there's a way to bring that to life. On the license side, as we discussed, we're just huge sports fans, huge story fans to begin with. So we really have to find something that brings a little spark to us. For instance, we brought up wiffle ball already. I mean, P and I are friends since middle school, you know, live 10 minutes away from each other growing up. So there are many, many afternoons where we're playing wiffle ball in the backyard or mini stick lacrosse till the sun goes down and things like that. So when you think about a wiffle ball or a USA lacrosse, that brings a spark to us. So we know that we can do that justice and bring it to life. So we kind of just think about it that way. And again, as we talked about, it's how can we do it differently? And if we think there's a vision for that and it brings a spark to us, then we're pretty confident that we can do that justice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good indicator if, you know, you guys come up with a concept and you think, actually, that's super cool. You know, you've lived it, you've breathed it, you've grown up with it. It relates to a lot of the kind of authenticity that you're working on with Streaker Sports. So yeah, I mean, if it ticks those boxes initially, then it's going to escalate when it goes out into the public domain, hopefully, as well.
Exactly. And we've tried to keep that our baseline threshold, right? I mean, we've turned down opportunities or avoided specific requests for ideas or collections or things because it didn't bring a spark to us. It didn't feel authentic. And we didn't think we could do that story or that individual or that team justice. So for the time being, it wasn't meant for us.
And I think that's important. I think that's important, right? Not being afraid to say no at times, you know, not just, yes, you're young. Yes, you're making your mark in the industry and partnerships are important to you, but more important than that, the right partnerships are important to you to be able to grow your brand and grow the story behind what you guys are doing.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. We're not immune to jumping at an opportunity, thinking it's going to change the world. And we find out otherwise. Right. So it happens. It's part of the growing pains. But over time, I think we've tried to establish that threshold and really not just jump to jump. Let's be thoughtful about it and think about it. And leaning back into the licensing thing, that's another real consideration for us is the partnership side and the collaboration side of it. We've talked about colleges a little bit. There are a number of licenses and partnerships that we have that we've worked hand in hand with their archive teams, their athletic directors, their sports teams, their license directors to not only do research, but then collaborate on ideas and develop those concepts. You know, same with many of our licenses. That's kind of something that we almost demand of that partnership of let's work together to bring this vision both from your side and our side, not just, you know, putting out a collection to put out a collection and slap a logo on it. Let's tell these stories and let's have everyone's input.
We'll be right back with the interview after this quick ad from our official podcast sponsor, Streaker Sports.
StreakerSports.com is the proud sponsor of That Sports Merch podcast. Bringing creative collaborations, we're the home of unique, heritage-inspired apparel celebrating the culture of sports. Our licensed collections include iconic brands such as Peanuts, Wiffle Ball, and Zamboni. Organizations like USA Hockey and USA Lacrosse. Sports personalities like Dick Vitale and Bill Raftery, as well as 40-plus colleges and universities. Our defunct league collections revive forgotten professional sports leagues of years past, bringing some incredible logos back to life. Check us out at StreakerSports.com. And for a limited time, only for That Sports Merch podcast listeners, use the checkout code SPORTSMERCH15 to get 15% off site-wide. StreakerSports.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you must have some amazing insight when you get to dive into the archives of some of these schools and, you know, universities. I mean, that most schools and universities are built on history, right? You know, they've all got a storied history, whether that's on the sports side or just as a brand themselves. I mean, diving into the vaults and the archives and seeing these old logos and the old font styles and bits. I mean, I can't even imagine what that entails or what it feels like, but I'm sure you've kind of uncovered some incredible things when you've been on that journey with some of those partners as well.
Yeah. I think really we've seen it in the college space. In the last spring, Corey and I spent an entire day in the Harvard University archives, which you can imagine are pretty incredible. And we sat at a table for a full day and just rifled through old team photographs and these incredible football game programs from like the 1950s. And they had old uniforms and pennants and banners and all this incredible stuff. And, you know, from that came the art that we created for our licensed collection with Harvard. And, you know, and we were actually the first licensee to ever do that and requested that with them. And then kind of the same with Yale. You know, Yale has this incredible history. And actually a funny thing that happened was we were on a call a couple of weeks ago with a licensing director from a different school who were talking to about a potential license. And he actually used to work at Yale. And he was like, when you guys were working on the Yale collection, I was the one who actually went into our archives department and found that old banner that you guys created the Handsome Dan lineup shirt from. And he was like, while I was down there, I found this old picture of George W. Bush when he was here on the football team, something that like hadn't been brought to life. And he was, you know, he brought it back, you know, upstairs or whatever. It was like, hey guys, look what I found. Like, we got to frame this. So it was cool to hear that, you know, doing research and for us on our behalf and actually looking in those archives, they were able to find something cool. But it's been a ton of fun, like going through, you know, doing research for these schools. And, you know, there's a lot of really cool things that can be found online. There's a lot of like collectors forums, you know, people who either are alumni of the school or just collectors of old things like pennants and game programs and old decals and old, you know, jerseys and equipment. And we've found some really cool gems and places like that. And of course, we have to make sure they're authentic, and we have a process for doing that. But, you know, that's been a lot of fun. And like Corey said, we love working in partnership with these schools. So we want them to be as much of a stakeholder in this as we are. So, you know, like getting on those calls and saying, hey guys, look what we found. And, you know, this is really cool. Have you guys ever seen this logo before? And sometimes they've never even seen it there. Like, we had no idea that, you know, Boston University used this mark in the 1950s or whatever it is. So the process with colleges especially has been a ton of fun.
Yeah. I can imagine, like, for those guys, it's just as fun. You know, they're kind of diving back into things that they probably never imagined, you know, would just be kept locked away for years. And suddenly you guys come along and you want to see the goods. And it's, I can imagine the guys that get involved from their side, it's a whole ton of fun to kind of look back and find that, especially if they light up as much as you guys do when you kind of see that stuff. If they can relate and they're excited by it and they're passionate about it, then, you know, that's a win-win from both sides, and you can't fail to create great product off the back of that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's been one of the coolest things. You hit the nail on the head there. Seeing some of these individuals, again, specifically with college, the LDs or the team members that have been at that institution for a number of years, the spark kind of reinvigorate them and come back to life when they're reminiscing, oh, you know, my brother went here in 76 and I remember that logo. I think he still has a sweatshirt in his closet. And just putting a smile on their face and hearing some of those stories or those kind of tying it back to specific memories, that's been really cool to see and be a part of that for sure.
Yeah, that's super cool. And not many people will be able to offer that experience to those guys as well. So again, another way of differentiating yourself and something that probably really appeals to, you know, certain people in certain places. You mentioned the hand-drawn design assets as a, you know, big point of difference. And how the archives and the finds that you guys, you know, research and come up with allow you to then kind of move forward into the designs and the design assets. How important for you, or not important, is it for you that you're almost identical to the original? Do you prefer to be as close to the original as you can for the authenticity, or are you inspired by original art and bring a new version of that to market?
So it's actually both. So I think when we're talking about vintage logos, we want to be as authentic as possible. So we're really taking a close look at the source of, you know, where we find that logo, whether it's on an old pennant, an old media guide, a photograph, whatever, and make sure that we're really nailing it, because authenticity is so key to our brand. You know, there are some other brands in our space that will, you know, kind of put their own spin on vintage marks. And, you know, that's fine, but that's just not what we do. However, what we will do is, you know, we'll take inspiration from period correct art. So say we're creating, you know, a 1970s era hockey shirt. We'll research, you know, we'll look at some media guides or some photographs from that era and say, okay, you know, here's how it should look. You know, here's what the equipment looked like, or here's like the art style that was prevalent during that time, and really try to match that aesthetic. So we create our own original graphic, but it's based on the art style from that period. So I think we do a really good job of that. One of our graphic designers, he specializes in hand-drawn vintage art. So that's like what he does. And you know, he's been really able to nail not only the actual visual of the graphic, but like exactly, you know, he's drawing it like they used to. He's doing it by hand. He's putting in those little details, and then we're giving it that authentic, like, distressing pattern. So, you know, I'll say that since he's been on the team, he's really brought it to another level. And I think that's one of the things that we hear most often from customer, you know, people who are kind of discovering our brand for the first time, or from licensors that we're working with. They really comment on the authenticity of our graphics and just how it's like has that unique, clearly hand-drawn touch. And again, you know, the vast majority of brands aren't doing it that way. And I think it's given us a nice advantage.
Yeah, I guess, you know, matching up to the original techniques, and you're not going to get more authentic than that. Whereas some people try and, you know, use modern design techniques to make it look and feel as close to the original. But yeah, matching the original techniques is, you know, you're really focusing in there on the detail and providing that true authenticity in terms of the product. And then in terms of kind of, I guess I'm stepping through this process with you, but so you've got the designs and you're starting to build out collections, you're collaborating with partners, and, you know, you're getting their feedback, and you're really starting to plan out the execution of the license and what it's going to look like. How far ahead are you guys looking? Are you presenting the first collection and the first drop? Or are you presenting, you know, this is what the first collection will look like, but then, you know, hey, in 6 months' time, it needs a freshen up. Timescales might be different, but it needs a freshen up, drop two, and here's drop three in 12 months' time. You know, how important is it for you guys to be able to see and understand the longer term plan right from the off?
Yeah, from a brand standpoint, our process has evolved over time. But at the end of each year, we kind of sit down with the team and we essentially have a brainstorm of what are some target collections or target licenses or target partnerships that we want to go after or plan for the following year. We may come up with three ideas, or we may come up with 30 ideas at that time, but we then use that to map out the coming year, right? So I guess initially we're thinking a year ahead. We try to map that to specific anniversaries, specific releases. We do a lot of our collegiate work, you know, late summer into fall. So it gives us a fairly vague, but, you know, direction to head. And then from there, we start to attack each opportunity. I think we're at a point now where on a specific collection base, we're trying to kick that off 3 to 6 months in advance. And as part of those conversations, if it is a license, as you alluded to, we're definitely having those conversations. So we're saying, hey, this initial drop is going to be 8 to 12 pieces. This is kind of the era or the concept or the logo type or, you know, that we want to adhere to. But the following spring, we're going to add these sports to it from a collegiate standpoint. Or, you know, for USA Hockey, this Christmas time, we're going to add a co-collab with Peanut. So we try to envision and discuss, what does that look like 2, 3, 4 releases or builds on those releases from now? And coming full circle back to the partnership, those conversations have led to a lot of things that we didn't even anticipate, right? Hey, it's a 25th anniversary of this specific logo coming up. How can we draw attention to that? Or it's, we have this thing coming, the Peanuts Museum later this year. How can we bring that to life with the partnership? So again, it's the collaboration piece for us. So it's an evolving, moving target, but I think our process starts about a year out, and then we really kind of put boots to the ground and start to really think about that 3 to 6 months for each kind of collection on a rolling basis.
Perfect. Yeah. It's, I guess the, as the partnerships grow and become more mature, you know, those guys are doing the research as much as you guys are. You know, I'm sure you guys spend an age researching and planning, but there's nothing like the partner kind of presenting an opportunity there that they then trust you to collaborate on and kind of do justice. So no, it's fantastic that it's all working in that way for you. I'd imagine, you know, Streaker has had its challenges. Let's not gloss everything up and, you know, let's live in the real world. You are a young startup, elevated your operation significantly since jumping in full time and giving it that full focus. If you don't mind, you know, what are some of the biggest hurdles and struggles you've faced as a young business?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if you heard me laughing there, but to your point, we've made every mistake under the sun. And I think, unfortunately, some days it feels like we're still continuing to do that. So it's kind of just the nature of the beast. You know, we're learning and we're growing and trying to figure it all out as we go. I think two things kind of come to mind that stand out. I think, you know, one, going back to kind of how we differentiate ourselves, maybe for some other brands, is we've kind of tried to grow this thing slowly and responsibly. And as we alluded to before, it kind of started as a side hustle or passion project thing. And we've remained with that mindset to date of, let's feel good about what we're doing every day and let's grow this slowly and take on the right partnerships, add the right team members. We're not a brand that's trying to grow at all costs, just to grow. So balancing that of the desire for success and brand awareness, along with keeping in mind of why we're doing this and how we want to do it, I think that's just inherently a hurdle that us as humans, you know, struggle with on a sometimes feels like hourly basis, but you know, definitely on a periodic basis. And then with that, as we've grown and scaled, I think hiring's been a real, I won't say struggle, but deciphering what role or what responsibilities are going to move the brand forward the most, and amongst ourselves kind of understanding and deciding that, and then finding the candidate that we think really checks those boxes or as many boxes as possible. That's something at scale that is newer to us. So we're still trying to figure that out and navigate that. And I think each opportunity in that realm comes with its own challenges, right? Is it a remote person? Is it somebody that's based in a certain spot, working hours, working style, communication style, you know, obviously vision of brand and things like that. So I think those two things, just balancing the true North Star against maybe some of the outside chatter. And then with that growth, the hiring kind of process in a whole has been an interesting one to navigate.
Yeah. Yeah. Hiring's tough at the best of times to try and find the right candidates. But as you mentioned, also trying to find not just the right fit, the right person, but the right role, You know, it's you know you need to grow, but you probably need to grow in several different ways. And how, you know, what's the first priority and what's going to lead on to kind of sustained growth as well. So
yeah, that's exactly the conversations. And I do want to say, you know, as challenging as hiring can be, we have been extremely lucky with the people that we've brought on board. And I think pointing back to kind of how we envision this and how we've grown this, a good number of those candidates have come inbound to us, and we've gotten really lucky in that way. But they've, not to speak for them, but they've seen what we're doing and more importantly, how we're doing it. And they really wanted to be a part of that. So as challenging as that process can be, I think staying true to who we are, as we've discussed a couple of times here, has really led to easing up that process a little bit. And admittedly, I know we've been lucky with that, but I'd rather be lucky than good in certain instances.
Probably give yourselves a bit of credit.
Yeah, I guess it all comes full circle in the end, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for those guys that are coming into your business as well, when you are growing and you're scaling, but at this key period, it's buying into that authenticity and that staying true to who you are must be, you know, you're kind of trusting that person to join and to kind of, I imagine, have that same mentality and that same mindset right from day one, you know, and finding that person must be tough.
Yeah, skill set's one thing, but kind of demeanor and that character and attitude is a whole nother ballgame. I mean, yeah, we're scaling. There's been a lot of great successes, but I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that every day is a little different. Every day is going to have a speed bump, and finding those people that are not only willing to roll with those things, but kind of excited about it, right? And being able to pivot and get the enjoyment, excited of, okay, well, let's go do that now. And I'm happy to change that. Or I love that feedback. And finding those people are what really can drive a brand forward. They're kind of the multipliers, if you will. At the stage that we're at, that's really important to us.
Rock stars and catalysts. That's what you're after.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take any of those I can get.
And Pete, anything to add to that in terms of any unique challenges that kind of expand on Corey's two that he's kind of raised there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really trying our best not to get shiny object syndrome. You know, I think that there's so many different things that we want to be doing that we're not doing or in the process of doing, and we want them to go faster. But the reality is that, you know, we've got a small team. As Corey said, we're trying to grow this thing super responsibly. Profitability is key. You know, this is a long, slower burn for us. You know, our mantra is, you know, that we want to get 1% better every day, and we're not trying to, you know, skyrocket or, you know, rocket this thing to the moon. You know, it's so I think as much as we know that is our strategy, it is hard sometimes to, you know, either say accept that we can't do certain things right now because we're keeping the, you know, that responsible growth in mind, and then saying, okay, like, you know, maybe this isn't realistic for us right now. Let's make that a goal for next year. You know, I think there's always, you know, it's a very, the world is it's such a fast moving place. And, you know, I think the sports apparel industry, you know, you're constantly seeing things on social media about these brands who are doing these cool things, right? These awesome partnerships and putting out these really cool collections. And, you know, it's hard to not compare ourselves sometimes and say, well, why aren't we doing that? Or, you know, and so, but I think like, so that is very challenging. But I think when we kind of take a step back and say, okay, we know our strategy and we know exactly where we want to be 1, 2, 3 years down the road. And, you know, that's kind of what I mean by not having shiny object syndrome and all of a sudden just changing course and say, oh my God, this brand is doing this. We need to go and do something very similar.
Yeah, no, I get that completely. I've been in those positions, and, you know, you fight every feeling that's inside of you to stay true and stay on brand and, you know, stay authentic to what you're doing. You're building, you're growing, the growth is there. As you say, it's the slower burn and the long game in terms of where you want to get to by not pivoting and moving away from that, being true to your strategy. So I appreciate that. Appreciate that. And you mentioned there the 1, 2, 3 years down the line. Are you the type of organization that plans a 5-year plan? Are you, you know, rolling with it as it comes, or, you know, where do you see and where do you hope Streaker Sports is in 5 years?
Yeah, I'd be lying to you if I said we have a definitive 5-year plan. I think that our goal, like I said, is to sit down at our desk every day and say, how do we get 1% better today? We definitely have things planned out at least a year in advance. So, you know, in the next 12 months, we're going to be announcing some really exciting new licensing partnerships that we're stoked about. Beyond that, we have some balls in the air and some opportunities, but, you know, those things necessarily might not be solidified. So I think it's, you know, as we're continuing to scale and have more members of the team and have more resources, we're able to sort of plan out further and further ahead. I'll tell you that our planning is much better than it was even a year ago. So, you know, I think as long as we feel like we're truly getting 1% better every day, we're adding new licenses, we're taking advantage of opportunities, going after opportunities, you know, kind of having our North Star objectives, we have no reason but to believe that this thing is going to keep growing. We're going to keep, you know, getting more brand awareness in the market. And, you know, and really what we're starting to see really like in the last 6 months is more and more licensors are emailing us and saying, we want to work with you guys. Whether that's, you know, colleges and universities or organizations, you know, we weren't really, to be honest, we weren't really getting those inbound requests to work with us, you know, not nearly as frequently as we are now. And to Corey's point, you know, now, like, we're kind of starting to say no to certain things, which, you know, we didn't really have the privilege of doing that, you know, a couple of years ago. So I think we're like at a really kind of at a point where we can really maybe start to pick and choose what we want to do. And so I think that's kind of what we're envisioning, at least for the next year or 2 years.
Yeah, nice. It's fantastic to hear that it's coming full circle, and the guys are now kind of chasing you guys up and saying, hey, look at this opportunity, and, you know, we like what you've done. And I guess it's coming because of, you know, you've been in the marketplace for a while now, and people are seeing different collections, different licenses land in, and, you know, they're having a real good look at what you do. It's easier to be, I guess, more visible to the market, the more kind of licenses that come in and that you execute really well. So yeah, no, it's fantastic that it's, I guess, the cold sell isn't as important when great opportunities are kind of coming down the line to you guys. And long may that continue. One thing we've talked a lot about licenses and collabs and co-licensing. You obviously have a significant B2C kind of element of product that you do as well. And I just wanted to touch on Defunct League before I kind of have to drop off. But I think when I first looked at your site and when we first started talking, the Defunct League was just one that, as a sports merch geek, self-confessed, it just throws up some insane brands and team names and, you know, even competitions and leagues and bits. It's just, that must be just incredible fun to work on and to pull together. And, you know, that product must bring a lot of joy in terms of kind of reincarnating those defunct, exactly what it says, those defunct brands and defunct leagues that are no longer there. And yeah, I got lost in that particular section of your website for quite some time.
There's some incredible old logos. I mean, the art from those like eras of yesteryear is just so cool, and like what really resonates with us. And that was a, you know, going back to when Corey and I relaunched the brand and, you know, relaunched the brand under our own vision and kind of what we thought we wanted to do with it. That was an easy product avenue for us to do because with these defunct leagues and teams, the vast majority of them, either the trademarks are long dead or they were never trademarked in the first place. So we were able to build the brand on non-licensed product, build the brand up, build our customer base, build that recognition on non-licensed product, and then be able to build out our licensed portfolio.
Yeah, it gave you a great platform to kind of show the capabilities of you, you know, your brand, your design, your quality, your being able to put physical samples in front of a potential licensor when you have those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, going back to the root of the brand, as you know, mainstream as some of our other licenses or collections may be, right? And maybe in some cases they move the needle more from a financial standpoint or what have you. The life of the brand, the story of the brand is so synonymous with these defunct leagues and teams, right? The amount of social media engagement, emails, outreach, stories that we hear from, I used to go see so-and-so play for this team with my dad in 73 or whatever, you know, and like the stories and the life that those individuals see or feel when they see those collections, that's why we started the brand. So, you know, from that day forward, even through today, that is why, that's the heart, that's the root of the brand, is that water cooler kind of talk that, you know, hey, I walk into a bar and my buddy's like, oh my God, where'd you get that? The, you know, the memories that that t-shirt in their closet bring back. So that's something that, as P mentioned, we grew the brand on, but today remains kind of the center line of the heart of the brand and why we do it.
Yeah, it's, I recommend anybody has a look. It's, but give yourself plenty of time. Don't do it in a rush. You'll be there forever. But no, I can absolutely understand that. People's emotional ties to brands, whether they're defunct or they're, you know, they're winning the Super Bowl, it's the same. You know, you paid your money to go and watch those guys run about and perform their sports, or you just, you know, you grew up as a household supporting that particular brand and that team. It's one to get lost in, definitely, when you've got some time. But fantastic product, and obviously gave you guys a great springboard in terms of what you've gone on to do and how you've grown the brand. Listen, guys, that's been amazing to jump in and really understand the insight around not only the product, which is, you know, a massive part of what you do and stands you out as unique, but also the way in which, you know, the business acumen, the insight behind what it takes and the hard yards. You know, I think we'd all appreciate there's hard yards every single day, trying to retail and be within the sports industry. It's a beast. And, you know, I think it comes true and it's really clear that you guys have your vision, you have your focus, you know, you're staying true and staying, I think, humble as well comes across. You know, you're responsible in terms of what you're doing. So we just wish you all the best. It's fantastic for you to come on and take an hour of your time to kind of dive into a few of those things. And I'm sure loads of people will be interested in taking a look further. And I think it'll add a lot of value to people that are listening to this who are maybe just starting out their journey and in that position that you guys were when, you know, you took some difficult decisions in the early days and made a fair few mistakes, you know. And I think it's admirable that you can kind of look back on them and also, you know, say that day to day you're still making certain mistakes, and that's what you learn from and that's how you grow stronger. So no, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for the sponsorship of the podcast. Matt and myself really appreciate it. And yeah, we will be following each other's fortunes, I'm sure.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. And really appreciate those words. And for the listeners, if there's anyone out there that is just starting their journey, keep at it. That's the biggest thing. And if there's anyone interested in cool ideas or partnering or potentially joining the team, we encourage people to reach out. We're always open to conversations. And just like this partnership continues to grow, you know, we're all for that collaboration across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to share any information about reaching out, how the guys can contact you? Or?
Yeah, easiest is usually email, just info@streakersports.com. That'll get directed accordingly. And social channels at Streaker Sports. We appreciate it. And just if you shop any of the collections at streakersports.com, we truly appreciate the support.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks, guys. So now we know everything there is to know about Streaker Sports, Matt. Really enjoyed that one. Enjoyed getting under the surface with it and talking to the guys more about, you know, what really kind of drives their business. And I think it came through in that interview that, you know, the guys are really authentic, staying true to their identity, not being afraid to say no to opportunities that aren't right at this stage of their growth, and really kind of giving it everything in terms of the licenses that they do work on. And, you know, the whole piece about the archive and the, you know, diving into the vaults of Ivy League universities, I mean, that access alone must just be insane. They must be blowing dust off all sorts of things when they're kind of gathering that brand creative and, you know, looking at stuff from the 60s and 70s. It's just super cool. I mean, I really enjoyed that one.
Indeed. And there's a great story. And once again, kind of really grateful for their time and their support of the podcast. And I was just thinking while you were talking there, Lee, it's kind of probably a bit dangerous that we're putting this podcast out just after payday for most people, because there's some great stuff on their website that can probably be a bit more tempting at this time of the month as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick reminder that obviously any of the podcast listeners can get their discount on their website as well. That's not a sales plug, but, you know, every little helps. But yeah, I bang on about their Defunct League collections quite a lot, and I touched on it there at the end of the episode as well, because I just lose myself in their website when I start looking at that kind of stuff. Some of the awesome names of the kind of now non-existent teams that there were back in the 70s and 80s across some of the American leagues is something to really have a look at if you're as much of a sports merch geek as I am.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really enjoyable episode. And we continue to provide some interesting stuff, I hope, in terms of what we've done in the current series. So yeah, let us know, guys, what you think. Yeah, obviously we'll be posting this across a range of platforms. Yeah, let us know in the comments, drop us a line, drop us a message. We'd really like to know what you're thinking of things so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've covered three really different bases to start the new season off as well, Matt. So we've obviously got some great guests lined up for episodes 4, 5 and 6, which will be pulling together soon, and can't wait to share that content with our listeners.
Cheers for catching up again, Lee. It's been great to chat.
And you. Till next time.
Cheers.